Hello all, Nina Porzuki here. You're listening to The World in Words. Today in the podcast, we're going to be taking a trip down to Louisiana. You may have already heard my story about language immersion at one school in Baton Rouge. It got accidentally posted last week after it aired on The Big Show. Well, if so, consider it a sneak preview. I have a few extra moments in the podcast today. First, I wanted to head into the bayous, into French-speaking Louisiana, for a little lesson in Louisiana Creole French.
I wonder how many people can remember this. When you command a cow to encourage her to get in position for milking,
yes.
Would you know how to say that?
No.
Aha. Uh-huh. Poteau, Cayette.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor.
It's 8 a.m. on a rainy Wednesday morning in the small town of Ville Platte, down in southwest Louisiana, swamp country. Definitely time for a cup of coffee. Or as they say out here in French, la tasse de café.
Phone lines are open, ladies and gentlemen. 337-363-2124, near or far, if you want to give us a call. Donnez-nous un call à ce matin. 337-363-2124.
La Tasse de Café is a morning radio call-in show with Jim Swallow and Mark Lane. They broadcast live from KVPI, the local commercial station. It's nothing fancy. Just a one-story brick building, one car out front, a small wooden sign, and a big American flag. This is live radio, says Mark. Nothing's really planned for the show, not the topic of conversation, not even the language.
We can talk in French, we can talk in English, we can do a half and half, we call it franglais. One of the interesting topics is how you say a particular word in French, and we invite people to call in, and it's always interesting.
Like the word of the day, Jim introduces this rainy morning, command.
I wonder how many people can remember this. When you command a cow to encourage her to get in position for milking.
Yes.
Would you know how to say that?
No.
Aha. Uh-huh. Poteau, Cayette.
Turns out, a lot of folks remember.
And not call Jim.
All right. Moi, je veux. Bonjour. Qui c'est qui parle?
Jim.
Yes.
It's Gary Landrino.
Yes, Gary. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Oh, listen. We're doing okay.
This morning reminds me of a morning in January 1951. And my brother and I and he had 18 cows to milk.
French in Louisiana goes way back to the late 17th century when Europeans first settled here. About 100 years later, the Cajuns arrived. Fleeing British rule in Nova Scotia, they settled down here in southwestern Louisiana. At one time, you might have traveled through small towns like Ville Platte and not have heard a lick of English.
Jim.
Uh-huh.
Becky Buller, your classmate.
Becky Buller. Bonjour, Becky.
Bonjour. Comment ça va?
But today it's different. In the 1920s, the state outlawed French in public schools. And while the Cajun and Zydeco music and the gumbo continue to thrive, Louisiana's French dialects are dwindling. In the late 1960s, around a million people reportedly spoke French in the state. The 2010 census recorded just about 175,000 native speakers. KVPI is fighting hard to buck that downward trend. The station signed on in 1953, and it has been broadcasting news and programming in French ever since. And in the town of around 8,000 people, it seems like everyone is listening. I mean, everyone.
We can get the mayor. We have the mayor of Ville Platte right here who wants to make a special presentation, Jim.
All right.
Good morning, bonjour, tout le monde.
Mayor Jennifer Vadrine is a force to be reckoned with.
I am from here, was born and raised right here. I wasn't reared, I was raised. You know, in the South, you're raised.
And she was raised speaking French with her grandparents. Many locals like Vadrine remember their grandparents speaking French at home and always, always listening to the radio.
KVPI is our jewel here. You know, it's so much a part of our community. I'm telling you, if you die and they don't hear it on KVPI, you're not dead.
All right, Jim, another call.
Ooh, bonjour, qui c'est qui parle?
Bon matin, gentlemen, c'est Boise Pete, Prédidon.
Ah, Prédidon, go ahead.
Hi, Boise.
Hey, Mark, I wanted to tell you all a little story en franglais.
And if KVPI has anything to do with it, French will continue to be part of the conversation here. As they say down here, lâche pas la patate. Don't give up.
Et tous les États-Unis, et au revoir.
Ooh.
Wow, I'll tell you what, it was a busy one today. I wouldn't be able to stand another hour, I promise you that.
We'll hear more from KVPI in a bit. It was actually the most fun I'd had reporting in a while. The station is truly, truly the hub of the community. Mary Vidrine was not kidding when she said that if you died and you didn't hear it on KVPI, you were not dead. The station literally reads the obituaries on air. It is the center of life and, I guess, death in the community. From Ville Platte, I actually headed east 80 miles to this elementary school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You can hear a little bit more about that in a second. And over the course of my reporting, I've actually had the opportunity to report on several different language immersion programs. I reported earlier this year on programs rolling out across Utah, some Chinese language immersion programs, Spanish, a whole slew of languages there. And I've reported on immersion charter schools in Brooklyn. In all the schools that I've reported on thus far, language was kind of the central component, and language was the impetus for starting the programs in each of these schools. But I was curious about this one school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, as part of the East Baton Rouge school system, where it's actually race that is the very reason that this particular program exists. It's a magnet school, and for decades, East Baton Rouge Parish school system was under a federal desegregation order. It's actually one of the longest deseg orders in the country. It lasted 47 years. And one result of the deseg order was the introduction of a magnet program in the school system, and this particular magnet program, a language immersion elementary magnet school program, started. Language was used in two ways, both to attract middle-class families back into the inner cities, and then once they got there, language actually served as a way to sort of equalize the dynamics in the classroom between rich and poor and white and black. You'll hear more about that in the story. When I went to visit the school, I was actually shown around by Principal Miller. You don't mess with Principal Miller.
Are we having a good day, Miss Riley? Good, we're going to continue having a good day, Miss Riley. Yes, ma'am. Deep South, you know it's yes, ma'am.
Cheryl Miller is the principal of the Baton Rouge Foreign Language Academic Immersion Magnet. Quite a name. Thankfully, they call it FLAME for short. Miller's been here for the last 16 years. And if this morning's assembly is any example, she is a force to be reckoned with.
Let me go do my thing. Last I heard, it didn't take your mouth to get your book sacks placed.
Baton Rouge FLAME has undergone a ton of changes. It was once a white-only school, then it became all black, and then under the desegregation order, the school became a foreign language magnet.
Bonjour. Oh, no, 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 no. We're not doing the bonjour. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
Do we have any birthdays today?
At FLAME, French and Spanish immersion programs were used as the proverbial carrot to draw white middle-class families back into the public schools. It wasn't an immediate success, says Ms. Miller.
Believe it or not, some people would look at the building and go, ooh, I can't bring, you know, some white, I guess, mostly women would say, oh, you know, it looks terrible. And it did.
I'll be honest, the school facilities aren't the best looking. The gym is ancient. Pipes hang down from the ceilings and the hallways. It's an old school. But language has proved to be a bigger draw in the end than disgust at an old building. White middle-class parents enrolled their kids.
We had to make sure that we met the racial quota. For us, they said 60-40, which would be 60% black, 40% white.
And they did. The deseg order officially ended in 2003, and the school continues to maintain its quota. But there are many lingering questions, like from parents Carrie and Carlos Thomas.
I don't know if you know the background. The magnet programs are to magnetize middle-class families. Well, in the Deep South, middle-class families pretty much equate to white families, okay? And so to be middle-class and African-American, it was kind of like, where will we fit in?
Where did the Thomases fit in when it came to enrolling their son Carlos at FLAME? As a black middle-class family, were they left out of this antiquated quota? The Thomases wanted their son to learn French. Carrie grew up in Lafayette, the heart of French-speaking Louisiana. Her parents and grandparents spoke Creole French. And when the family first moved to Baton Rouge, they enrolled him into a private international school. And then they heard about the public option, FLAME.
For us, it was a no-brainer to go ahead and make the switch to the public option. You know, understanding that as Black middle-class parents in a system where 80% of the students are on free and reduced lunch, that sends a message that we want to invest in our public institutions. Well, we didn't get in.
Instead, they were entered into a lottery.
I was frantic. I, you know, emailed the principal, spoke to the magnet lead teachers, emailed the superintendent, called and spoke to people.
And little Carlos was lucky. He won a place from the lottery. And Carrie insists that he didn't receive any preferential treatment despite all of her advocating. But it did raise eyebrows about the equality of enrollment in this language magnet program.
And when I look back at it now, while I'm excited that he got in, there's also a realization that not everybody can advocate that way for their child.
This is far from perfect. There are clear equality issues when it comes to who gets to go to FLAME. And then you walk into the school itself. Old building, sure, but go into any classroom, and on the face of it, FLAME has achieved a diverse student body. But it's not quotas or lotteries or DSEG orders or even balanced enrollment that has created a feeling of diversity and equality inside the classroom. It's language, says FLAME parent Benter Martin.
Okay, so I'm going to sound like the angry Black man, but that's not my characterization. That's just simply what I see in the literature as I look through. I believe that when children learn more languages, it's hard for them to be a bigot.
It's harder for them to be a bigot, says Martin, because learning a new language exposes kids to different ways of thinking and speaking. And it also, and I'm going to sound a little academic here, dismantles the, quote, language of power. The language of power is the standard English we all learn in schools. It's the language of textbooks. It's the English that I'm speaking to you right now, white, middle-class English. But at Baton Rouge FLAME, that's not the case, says education professor Heather Olson Beal.
The language of power is not standard edited English, and it's not largely white middle-class women that are trying to impose that on their student population. The immersion curriculum makes it so that there are two languages of power, Spanish and French, and those are both languages that none of the students come to the school knowing.
Everyone is starting at zero, everyone on equal footing. Even many of the teachers, says Beal, don't speak English fluently. They are language learners, too. Different isn't one person or one group. Different is everyone.
But, you know, what happens when that is just part of their way of life? You go to a school and your teacher on the first day of school starts speaking to you in a different language, and you're going to school with all these different, you know, kids who look different from you, and they have different, you know, that's sort of the mission of public education.
At Baton Rouge FLAME, new song.
At Baton Rouge FLAME, new song.
Respect
Morning assembly is well underway, and Principal Miller watches her students closely, keeping the fifth graders in line, encouraging the kindergartners to stand up straight, all the time beaming a firm but encouraging smile. These are all her kids.
We're different. And sometimes we just need to understand that just because we're different doesn't mean we can't be together. And that's not a usual view in the Deep South.
And funny enough, it's language that binds everyone together. Black, white, rich and poor. I spoke at length with one of FLAME's French teachers. Her name is Madame Sizemore. She's been teaching for 15 years at FLAME. She's been there almost as long as Principal Miller. She's originally from Belgium, actually, and when she came to the United States more than 25 years ago, because she'd been in the States for a long time before she started teaching at FLAME, she actually didn't speak any English at all. She learned from scratch. Today, she speaks very, very fluent English. Locals are often confused by her accent.
You know, to this day, I have a lot of people that says that it's amazing that I picked up the accent from the South, and I don't know how I did it. They ask me if I'm from Ville Platte, and I've never been to Belle Platte. Apparently it's the kind of accent I have.
And although Madame Sizemore says that she has never been to Creole and Cajun-speaking Ville Platte, those 80 miles west, she does sometimes get questions from her students about words from Creole and Cajun French. The kids in Flame are learning to speak standard French, but I was curious about how heritage French dialects from the area filter into the classroom. Many of them have grandparents or parents that speak some Creole or Cajun French. And occasionally, Madame Sizemore says she gets a confused question from a student, like, my dad says it this way, but we're learning it this way. And to answer the question, she actually has to draw on the French of her own parents.
My parents, when they spoke to each other, when I was little, they would speak what they call Walloon. It is the old French. And I could hear them talk to each other. They wouldn't talk to us that way, but they would talk. And actually, a lot of the Cajun is based on the Walloon, the old French. So when I came here and I heard people, Cajun people, say Astur, I knew what it meant. Or un char, which is a car. And, you know, in my French, we don't say un char, we say une voiture, ou une auto. And so when I talk to the kids, you know, and I tell them, you can say, viens ici, Astur.
What does that mean, Astur?
Astur means right now.
Right now.
Yeah, and in my French, my French, your French, his French, we say maintenant. But we don't say Astur. But I use it every now and then because I want the kids to be familiar with that. And that's what that little child was telling me. My dad says Astur. And I say, well, you know, he says Astur. And it's correct to say that. But now we use maintenant.
Maintenant. Okay, pardon my bad French. We're going to end today's podcast back at KVPI with a bit of music from the bayou.
I'm leaving it all up to you.
In 1963, this song by the duo Dale and Grace hit number one on the charts and went gold.
What you gonna do?
It was a breakout hit from a new sound that was bubbling up in the bayous of southwestern Louisiana, swamp pop. Yeah, I know. Where's the washboard? Zydeco and Cajun music. That's what you typically think about hearing in Louisiana.
When the Cajuns of the 50s grew up, they didn't want to play the Cajun music. And when Elvis Presley and Fats Domino came out, they discovered rock and roll. So it was like an influence of New Orleans rhythm and blues. And it had a saxophone with horns and a backbeat. And it's called Swamp Pop, and it's located right here. We play a lot of Swamp Pop.
Mark Lane's the general manager at KVPI, the local station down in Ville Platte. He's been working at the station for 40 years. And when he started DJing there as a teen, he couldn't stand Cajun or Zydeco or Swamp Pop.
When I was growing up, I wanted to play the big rock bands like the Eagles and Grand Funk. And then later on, I had like a come to Jesus moment. I said, these, and I got to meet them. And these guys have as much talent as all these big national acts, but they just never got the breaks, Nina. That's why most of them never had, you know, the big recording contracts to really make it big.
Cookie and the Cupcakes, Johnny Allen, Randy and the Rockets, Bobby Page and the Riff Raffs. Yeah, never heard of them. Not surprising. In some ways, it seems these artists were creating a version of rock and roll all their own, almost translating the mainstream 1950s and 60s sound into something more familiar, something just for themselves and their neighbors.
When the twist craze got real popular, here's one called the Cajun Twist. Let me play a little bit of this.
Randy and the Rock.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lafayette.
Swamp pop artists also sang, as they say down here, en franglais. That is in French and English.
Here's Kalinda. That's a little French and English thing. Robinard. Kalinda was the name of the girl, and he kept saying, I want to dance with you, Kalinda, as long as your mom is around, because your mom didn't like me.
Ville Platte has become the epicenter of swamp pop. There's a little museum dedicated to it in town. And though the swamp pop greats are getting up there in age, People from around the world come every year to hear them and to dance at an annual Swamp Pop Festival that Lane started. But if you can't get down here for the festival, you can always listen to the music streaming every Friday, all day long, on KVPI.
Here it comes in English.
Linda was the sweetest girl in all the violin, and all the boys who danced.
And that's all for today. Back later this week for a short, short podcast with Erica Okrent, who answers one of your etymological inquiries. Thank you for sending them. And this one is about the word disabled and how it came to mean what it does today.
I was surprised because it wasn't exactly what I expected. I knew that sometime in the 70s, disabled had become the preferred term over handicapped. Mm-hmm. So I assumed that handicapped was the older term. That's usually how it goes. But that's not true.
The truth about handicap and disabled later this week. Keep your suggestions coming. You can post them on the World in Words Facebook page, or you can call 617-903-8818, 617-903-8818. I'm on Twitter at Porzuki. That's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I. Thanks so much for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.